Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Glorious Rugby Podcast. I'm your co-host, John Fitzpatrick, and joining me on this Victory Tuesday is my co-host, Alistair Kirschpool, AKP, fresh off a thrilling come-from-behind victory over arch rivals New England Free Jacks, ending their 14-game win streak at the place they call Fort Quincy. AKP, how you feeling, baby?
I'm feeling satisfied.
That's a great word, satisfied. Satisfied.
Yeah.
Satisfied, but hungry for more.
Oh, absolutely. This is a nice way to start the season.
Yeah, I agree. Particularly after the disappointing result week one against Nola Gold, who's now top of the Eastern Conference. Great to turn it around, get the win against New England, and then guess what we have this weekend, AKP? Please, everyone already knows, but enlighten us. What's going on this weekend?
Home opener. First game at the Maryland Soccerplex.
And the weather should be nice. Yeah. It's looking like mid-60s. Might be some clouds.
If it holds out, because Friday is looking rainy, Sunday is looking rainy, Saturday looking clear right now, so hopefully that rain stays where it is.
Exactly. Saturday is going to be a good rugby morning. Pun there. It's going to be a great rugby day. But we've got so much to talk about. I'm going to jump right into it. So we're going to break down week two and then get us set up for a big week three to make some more moves up the standings. Again, a five-pointer, baby. Sorry. We'll get into that in just a second. AKP, let's break down the week two. And we got to start with the lineup. What were your observations when you saw Old Glory DC put out their week two lineup against New England? I think New England put their lineup out first, too, if I could be wrong.
Yeah, I think that's the way it went. There were a few things. There were a lot of things that didn't change in the lineup. The forwards were pretty much the same, except we saw Jack Ascaro move to the bench and Quinton Newcomer start. And, you know, even at the time, I was like, that's a bit odd, but also could be sort of a bomb squad situation. For those that don't know, the South African national team had a phase where they would call their reserves the bomb squad, and they would put some of their best players on the bench so that they could bring them in, you know, at the 50th minute, 60th minute, and just clean up opponents. And so as long as they didn't get too far down, they would have a chance to win. You know, there were some more changes in the back. Buckley on the bench, McVay starting. I was slightly nervous about that because Buckley did a great job in week one, and McVay was like, you know, some good, some bad off the bench. And then Robertson moving to 10 and Bowed, you know, Grady moving back to 15. And then Shabazz starting. And we saw Perry Humphreys leave the roster. Now, we got a bit of an answer on why that happened, too, because Old Glory released a list of players unavailable for selection. And, you know, Perry Humphreys on that. He's injured. Doesn't seem too bad. I think he'll be back soon. TBD on what soon means. But same with Facundo Gaddis. He apparently picked up a minor injury. Could be out for a week or two.
AKP, before you jump into it, you did a little internet journalism. We got to shout out to your article where you reached out to just get a status update on because it was a lengthy list of players.
Yeah.
Some things you can't reveal, some things you can. Tell us a little bit more, for those who didn't read the article, shed a little more light on some of the players and their availability status, just so we know moving forward.
So there's a couple of players who are, well, Kevin Brough, we know, is injured. He's out for the season, and we knew that preseason. We've got Perry Humphreys now injured, should be short-term. Facundo Gaddis, also short-term. He could be back this week, we don't know. And those are sort of the confirmed injuries. There's a few more players who are, you know, Danny Tuisotalo was late into camp. He isn't yet ready to take the field from the sound of it. The same with Damian Hoyland, who is actually in the country now, but has a bunch of paperwork, basically, health checks and that sort of stuff to go through before he can take the field for Old Glory. I don't know if he'll be available to play this week or not, but it shouldn't be too long on him. Axel Muller was out last week, you know, finishing up a suspension that he picked up in France, but he should be available this week. And then there were a couple of other players on that unavailable list who I didn't even know were with the team. Tristan Cole has apparently, he's been training with the team, and he's apparently now a full member of the team. So that's good to know. A hooker, I think straight out of college, or maybe he was drafted a year ago. I don't remember quite. I'm a little fuzzy on his details. And then Charlie Overton, who we picked up his draft rights after he was drafted in the 2023 draft, but then he has not signed with the team or anything. He's gone back to college. So yeah, that about does it. That's quite a list. And there's a lot of back three players in that list. I mean, you think about Old Glory's, you know, going into the season, what you would have said was Old Glory's ideal back three. You'd put Damien Hoyland, Perry Humphreys, and Axel Muller in there, and none of them are available. You know, three big signings. And I talked before the season about how it was going to be fun this year having a more experienced back three and having, you know, hopefully more consistency there and more experience to sort of keep things stable back there. And then none of them are available.
None of them are available, but, you know, we'll talk about this a bit more when we break down that New England game. But I've got to say, the back three really stepped up and played really well against New England, even when they were getting down quite a bit. So, you know, good news there, and just adding more depth and experience. But with reinforcements coming in, particularly the ones that we are most excited to see, I think we'll get into this in the next segment, but I think there's a lot we've learned and will continue to learn about this team over the next couple weeks.
One last point, too. I forgot to mention Mike Tabulis, who is coming off of a long-term injury. He seemed reasonably healthy during the preseason practice, and from what I've heard, he's pretty much ready to play now. So we could see him this weekend.
Awesome. That would be a great little lift for the home crowd. First game at Maryland Soccerplex. Going to be a beautiful day. So awesome. AKP, thanks again for the insight there. Just providing a little more context, because we know sometimes things can be a little murky, and it's great to be able to chat with the folks in the know to get information so the listeners have a better idea of what's going on. But AKP, let's move into it now. Let's get into breaking down the game. And I just kind of want to start with, hey, okay, come from behind victory, 35-34. Try at the end from Willie T, who was subbed on 15 minutes before. Corner kick, Jason Robinson steps up, nails it in front of a hostile crowd. Shout out co-owner Chris Dunleavy for jumping over the fence. Go back and watch the replay of that. It was hilarious. Jumped right over. He's so excited. Fantastic. But, AKP, I want to just start off the top with, what did we learn about this team coming out of this result?
I think we learned quite a lot about this team. For one thing, I'm going to stop trying to second-guess the coach's lineup decisions.
Sorry,
because
Simon.
In the end, things worked out well. And, you know, like, McVay, freaking awesome at scrum half. You know, Robertson, just a sensation. And we knew he was good at fly half, but it surprised me how much better he was at fly half than Bowd, and how much better, in some ways, Grady was at fullback than Robertson. So, you know, there was, you know, Shabazz had a great game, you know, jumping into the starting lineup. So overall, just like, and with the whole bomb squad thing that we talked about with the forwards, I mean, Jack Iscaro coming on late in the game, and he was pivotal, you know, absolutely demolishing those New England scrums towards the end of the game, just securing us penalties and giving us, you know, chances to get back in that game. So overall, not gonna second guess the lineup decisions. I think it's also interesting where, you know, there's a lot of players who at the beginning of this season I was like, I, you know, maybe these guys work out, maybe they don't. We had a lot of inexperienced players who, you know, they could be good, but we haven't seen it yet. And so I was like, I didn't want to take too strong a position on them or say this guy's gonna be great, but then basically all of them have turned out to be good players. So I want to give credit to the coaching staff again that, you know, John Powers has not played center in the MLR until this year. And he's been solid at outside center. You get, you know, Ishmael Shabazz has played a handful of matches for New York, and then he comes in starter and plays really well for us. You know, there's just all sorts of pieces around the team where, you know, unproven pieces that have turned into sort of turned into gems. And that's, it's a credit to the scouting ability of the coaching squad that they're able to do that, that they were able to find these guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll go back to last week's episode where you and I, we were talking about our score prediction. And while we thought Old Glory DC had a chance to win it, a lot of what we were basing it off is just the week one performance, certainly a disappointing result. And then having to go into New England and try and steal one there on teams won 13, 14 straight games, who plays really well at home. In our mind, in my mind, I'll speak for myself, it seemed like a tall task to say they're immediately going to be able to flip the switch and turn around and get a great result. But
we said there's something going on. I mean, yeah, the thing is, like, you got to see it. You got to prove it. Like, especially as fans, you know, I'm glad that the team believed in themselves and thought that they could get through this and believed, because they're the ones that should be able to, that should know that and should have that faith in themselves. Yeah. We as fans, like, part of the point is, like, we got to see it. You got to, if you want our, you know, we're going to support regardless of whether the team wins or loses. That's, we're here through thick and thin. But if you want us to like have confidence that you're going to win, you got to show us that you can win. And they didn't really do that in week one. They showed bits and pieces of it, but it wasn't until this week that it's like, okay, yeah, now I can think about this team in a totally different way. This is a team that can win, that has faith in itself, that can come back from deficits, that can remain confident and remain, you know, they were clean penalty wise. They did really well this match to keep it under control and not get overwhelmed by the moment and start making a bunch of silly penalties. You know, that's the stuff that we hadn't seen from this team yet. Now that we've seen it, it's like, okay, I'm not going to doubt it anymore.
I want to carry on that theme that you mentioned, just belief in themselves. Cause I think we really saw that in the first half, particularly when New England scored quick and they scored early, right? They scored off a nice little line out play. Poland goes in, or the, I think the eight man or the hooker peeled off to the right, inside pass to Poland right to Paula Bellicana, touchdown. They scored, they're up 7-0, first 3 minutes into the game. Okay. New England then, I think, gets a penalty kick, and then they score another try, which I think was, and I think this was, if I'm trying to recall correctly, I think this was John Rizzo trying to get into the game, and I think he was feeling his way into the game a little bit, kind of came across to field a ball, and I think it just jumped up, an unlucky bounce, and of course, man on the spot, Reese McDonald, scoring three tries the week before, lands right in his arms, and he dots down. I think New England's up 17-0. And I got a text from a couple of folks I know who cheer for the Free Jacks, and they're like, oh, this is going to be a long game. And I said, chill. Whoa, whoa, whoa. There's so much time left in this game. But this goes back to your point about belief in yourself, right? The team never panicked, never backed down, and just kind of continued to, they just needed possession and continue to kind of play their game and dictate it. And darn it, if they didn't just keep coming back. And yeah, they scored, and then New England scored again. I think they were down 10 at half, but it never felt like, in my mind, that Ogloid never had a chance. They kept coming back. So while some things we'd like to correct, you know, not getting down early, getting off to a slow start, they never wavered in their belief, I guess, to say, hey, you know what, look, we can do this. We've got the team for it. And I think that's what I think was most inspired about, is being able, the ability to dig back from some large deficits and not have the game put away and out of reach so early. But AKP, besides that, the malls are on fire. Our lineout steals were great. Talk a little bit more about some of the other things that worked really well for Old Glory in the game.
Well, I think it's pretty clear that, at least at the moment, with so many of our, with our backline being in such disarray with so many unavailabilities, the strength is our forwards, who were just able to control this game. Like you said, the malls were successful basically every time. And that's something we saw against NOLA as well. So that's not just like, that's not just a fluke, a one game thing. our lineouts were generally on target, and we were very disruptive to their lineouts. We were able to steal it frequently. The scrums were destructive. It was a bit slow in the first half, but then again, you know, we did this sort of bomb squad. You know, we sort of held our own in the first half and then dominated in the second half. And I think, you know, that's a place where we can get a lot of power. If we can get penalties from scrums, and we can just things like making it not reliable for them to be getting, you know, these set pieces, when your opponent can just rely on them working, it opens up so much stuff. When they have to be second guessing, like, are we even going to be able to make something of this? That is a very influential position for Old Glory to be in. So, you know, full credit to forwards. And it makes sense, because you think about the amount of talent we've got up there, and, you know, the number of international caps that are in that, and a lot of them USA international caps. It's great, and I'm glad it's working. And, you know, we've got to call out Martin Vaca for just being sensational. Absolutely sensational.
What a pickup. We sold him in week one. I called him like a menace or a pest, because he was just jawing and getting in breakdowns and stuff. And week three, of course, scoring 3 tries, amazing. I got to say, that big fella can move. On his first try, when the ball came out wide, he was able to turn John Poland, or maybe that was Reese McDonald a little bit, to able to get the extra meters to dot down. But he's got a little wiggle in those hips, man. And if he gets the ball in a full head of steam, he can run you over you, or he can make you miss. Dang it if he didn't play on fire.
Absolutely. And he didn't miss any tackles either. I was going through the stats. 0 missed tackles. 11 successful tackles. 0 missed tackles. And that's, you know, that's quality.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I want to call out real quick, because it involves Vaca too, but, you know, this team, there's definitely strength in the forward pack. A game against New England, you knew it was going to get chippy. You knew it was going to get it emotional. And look, I like the fact that our boys didn't back down and got a little chippy back, right? There was a couple of, you know, borderline tackles on both sides. Both teams got worn, probably too much. But there were dominant hits. You brought it up earlier. Ethan McVay laying down a dominant hit.
Crunching,
you know, hit. Boney, probably, you know, some crunching hits. Grady playing well at 15, fielding the high balls, laying down the hits. I mean, that's what I want to see too. I want to see a team that's not afraid to back down and is willing to put a hard hit out there. And we saw that. I mean, this is not a team that is just going to finesse their way through the game. If they need to lower the boom, hence the boom squad, they're going to do it. And that was awesome to see.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a very satisfying game in for that reason. I mean, there's sometimes wins where you're like, oh, that was shaky. But this one was just, I mean, we just powered through them. We made New England look like the less physical and less quality team. I mean, they had some fast guys in the backs who were able to take advantage of some broken play to score a few tries. But other than that, we felt like the team that was in control of the match.
We got to bring up my boy, Willie T.
Yeah.
Made an appearance, was a reserve in week two. Came on with about 20 minutes left in the game. Some tackles, a couple of meters, moving the ball. But, of course, you know, the game-winning try. He's a big, talking about guys that aren't going to, you know, back down from something. We've highlighted his pestiness in the past. There's just something about when he's in the lineup and just the dynamic ball play. But then just the being able to score a forged try. That was a forged try.
It really was.
And,
yeah.
And I do want to shout out Coy Nelligan real quick, because, and look, New England was bringing down the malls all day long, collapsing the malls all day long. Our boy Coy got the ball. That maul is moving forward. It's getting close. Coy, if he could have read it, and I get it, it's easy for me to say. Hindsight's always 20/20. If he waited maybe just another beat or two more, he probably could have put down that try. And I think maybe in the excitement in the moment, he kind of got a little too rushed, tripped up a little bit, and unfortunately just got stopped short. But of course, our boy Willie T was there to dot it down. We're going to talk about what the lineup may look like in week three. I got to imagine we're going to see more minutes from our boy Willie T. But AKP, I mean, before we start talking about that ideal lineup, is there anything else that you feel like we need to talk about in that week two win over New England?
Yeah, I just want to take a moment to call out the sort of way too early narratives that have developed in MLR. You can't tell anything from week one. You can only tell a little bit. And then and even week two, people should be a little more cautious to assume that what they're seeing on the field is indicative of how the entire season is going to go. And I think you had, after week one, you had a lot of Free Jacks fans who are like, oh, we just won 46 to 13. Clearly the repeat is on. We're the favored for the championship. And it's like, no, guys, you beat Anthem. Like, congrats, but you know, you beat Anthem.
And hey, I think Anthem's showing some punch, but yeah, keep going.
They're showing some punch, but you're like, okay, you beat the development side. Like, good for you. That doesn't make you, you know, it's way too soon. You haven't played anyone yet, so you don't get to come out here and say like you're the best and you're going to repeat as champions. It's like, no, especially in MLR where, you know, we haven't seen any team be dominant for more than 1 year at a time. And so, yeah, Free Jacks towards the end of last year, great team and a step above most of the other teams in the league. But that doesn't mean that it's going to even bring the whole team back. Everyone else, you know, is going around finding new people, adjusting their team. There's no guarantees in MLR that just because you were good last year means you're going to be good this year. And I think, you know, the Free Jacks still have a chance to build themselves into a good team again this year, but it's not a given. And I think it was also pretty satisfying to prove that to the Free Jacks fans. Don't get ahead of yourselves, guys.
Yeah, true. 100%. That's great. And I think that's a great moment, great pivot, segue to start looking ahead at week three here. And before we break down the opponent, the Chicago Hounds, AKP, given the player availability stuff that you brought up, and then as we look to kind of what we think the ideal lineup is, paint the picture for me. In your mind, week three, we may get a more clearer or better look at what our ideal lineup is. So walk me through what you think the ideal starting 15 looks like, say against Chicago, or the possibility that could be in play.
Yeah, and so I didn't want to be too critical of the team after they, you know, great win against New England. I do think that we're seeing the limits of the back line and the inexperience. And they played well to contain the very experienced, very successful back line of the New England Free Jacks as much as they did. But when you've got, you know, John Powers at 13, you've got Shabazz and Rizzo on the wings, and then you've got, you know, Grady, who's really a fly half at fullback. I think there's a limitation to that lineup of it. You just, there's, when we, the tries that teams have scored against us, I mean, there have been a couple of just honest through the forwards tries, workmanlike tries, you know, once off the back of a maul, once, you know, cutting around through a lineup and just straight through. But a lot of them have been on broken play or, you know, moments going around the edge where the back three of the opposing team has managed to find gaps and create overlaps. And I don't want to pin it on any specific player because I don't know if I can pin it on any specific player. But overall, I think the backs right now are the weakness of this team. And especially, and it's on that way on attack, too. When you look at the way we scored our tries, it was almost all through the forwards. And even the tries that weren't, you know, weren't forwards tries or weren't scored by forwards technically, there were still forwards tries. I mean, Willie T dotting it over, he was basically acting like a flanker right there. You know, when Jason Robertson scored his try, he was right up next to the line, right with the forwards. He was playing like a forward. Although, interestingly, Vaca's long-range try, his first try, that was a backs try.
That was, the way he turned Poland. Yeah.
And when you look at the way these tries are set up, you know, that was set up by Robertson. That's what makes it, you know, that was Robertson and the line playing, the back line, and the way the back line is playing set up that try. But the other tries, they've all been set up by the forwards and the quality of the forward play. And that, you know, that's, it's great that our forwards are good enough to be able to do that reliably and consistently, but I think we need to see a bit more from the back line. We haven't really seen, you know, long breaks or real threats from the backs to score. And, you know, Jason Robertson coming in at fly half makes a big difference. We saw a lot, we saw more threatening of that this week, more chances for the backs to make an impact. And we saw that one with Vaca, him putting Vaca through with a really creative, you know, half break through the line. But I want, and I do wonder if it's just experience. You know, maybe if we put Axel Muller back there when we get Damien Hoyland and he's in there. Mike DeBoulis coming back, and, you know, he's a really dynamic attacking player from at fullback. You know, when we've got Willie T stepping in at 13, and you could see that this game. Willie T steps in, it comes in off the bench, and, you know, he's passing differently. John Powers is reliable, but he's not as much an attacking threat as Willie T is, which, you know, that's a high bar to clear. And so I think, I wonder if we just need that extra level in the back line, and especially in those outside backs. So outside center, wings, fullback, to really take that, the lineup to the next level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree 100%. And I think if we can stretch the field, play wider, you know, the ability to have, you know, the skip passes that we know there, I think it's going to open things up for really Boney, I think, to really start to do some
he had a good game too.
He did really did. Willie T to be able to have more space for them to either run through people around them and just get more dynamic. So I'm super excited for the potential of what's to come. So AKP, let's jump into it. Week 3 opponent, Chicago yeah. Hounds. Historical, only one win, or only one game against them. That was a win, a home opener last year that Old Glory DC won. Note, Colin Gross, who stepped in at lock, scored, I believe, was the very first touch as a pro, dotting down after a quick little, like, start. And I think it was Danny who picked it up, inside ball to Colin Gross, who dotted down. So that's awesome stuff. Just want to make sure we call that out. But let's look at this Chicago Hounds team. Last year, I believe 3-13, probably, though, had the off season, one of the best off seasons of any team. I don't necessarily need to go through all of these, but, like, let's name a few here. Cap Deagle, Dylan Fawcett, still one of the best hookers in the league. Ben Landry, another capped Eagle. Lucas Rumble, you know, Captain Canada, essentially. Brad Tucker, capped Eagle, scrum half. Nick McCarthy, Jason Higgins, who came over from San Diego. Adrian Carlisa, that's it. Fly half, who can score, can play some fullback. You know, Dave Carney, you know, capped Ireland player. And that was just like six players that we named. AKP, what do we know about, a little bit more about this Chicago Hounds team, given the two results they've had so far, right? So week one, they had to go down to Miami in that monsoon. They did win at the end, and they're probably a little nervy. Week two, they went to Utah. Utah was able to win that one. Utah always usually plays pretty well at home. But tell us what you know about the Chicago Hounds.
They're sort of MLR's continuous enigma, because they had a good lineup last year and they've improved it this year, and yet they're still not able to really come away with wins. I think they came away with one win in their first game, but that was against Miami or LA, one of the two new teams.
Miami.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So potentially the second worst team in the league. They managed to get a win there. And, you know, it's just, and then they struggled this past week. So they're hard to count out in the long term, because you've got to think eventually this excellent roster sorts itself out and starts winning some things. But they've really struggled to actually turn the quality of their players into quality play on the field.
Yeah. You know, and I don't know what's going on there. A couple of interesting lineup decisions, right? Luke Hardy, who's been their fly half, capped Eagle, number two behind AJ McGinty, as you're talking men's Eagles. He hasn't been featuring at fly half. They've had Billy Meeks, who's traditionally a center, and granted, he's played all over in MLR. He even went in at flanker when he played with the Giltinis a few years back. Billy Meeks is slotted in at fly half. Cardi's been kind of coming off the bench. They finally had Julian Dominguez play. He scored a try in week two. So, you know, they've got so many scrum halves there. Some are playing wing. You know, Nate Osberger off to a little bit of a slow start for him compared to how he started last year. It's just, I don't know. There's certainly potency there. It's just, I think you said it right. They're just still kind of an enigma trying to figure out, you know, what they're going to be able to bring, and are they going to be able to piece it together? And granted, it's not fair, right? Chicago now, this is their third straight game starting on the road. That's tough for any team. I believe every single game they've played so far has been on the road. You know, so that's tough for a team, and certainly that's got to factor into things a little bit. But AKP, as we move along here, let's break down. We talked a little bit at the start of the episode. OGDC's projected starters slash will we see changes in the lineup for OGDC?
Well, this is one where I've been expecting changes to the lineup, or I've been expecting things from the lineup since the start of the season, and it hasn't come to pass. So the major places, I don't know whether we'll see, let's start in the front row. I mean, Vaca's going to play, obviously, as the starter. We may see, you know, if Facundo Gaddis is back, we may see him on the bench. I think, you know, newcomer might start, or we might see Ascaro start. I think it depends whether they want to go with that sort of bomb squad strategy or not. You know, Tyler Roland probably sticks around. I don't see any reason to change up the locks. That area has been fantastic. Don't see any reason to change up the loose forwards. I mean, you can't complain with Ajama. Had an excellent game against New England.
It looked like he hurt his ankle early in the game. They kind of taped him up, but dang if he didn't play 80 minutes again.
Yeah, and extremely successfully. But so I don't see many changes coming to the forwards. You know, it's really, if Gaddis is healthy, maybe he comes back, and that's really about it. I think in the backs is where we might see some changes. I think we'll probably see some combination of McVeigh and Buckley in the scrum halves. I mean, you know.
So no Danny week three? Well,
I mean, that's the question, isn't it? Yeah. He hasn't shown up so far, and he's been unavailable. But also, when you've got Buckley and McVeigh really killing it out there in so many ways, you know, maybe. And I was wrong about McVeigh. You know, definitely doubted him after that first match because he was sort of a mixed bag off the bench. But, you know, he excellent game against New England. So, maybe the coaches reward that and continue to play them. I'm sort of leaning against the likelihood of Danny being on the roster. I think it's possible. You don't really know, but I think Willie T, will definitely see him somewhere on the roster again because he had a great game. I think it would be great to see him starting. I think he brings a little bit of extra attacking and extra passing skill to the back line. John Powers has been solid, but there's a limit to him on attack. And then the back three, I mean, partly it depends on who's available. I think there's a decent chance we see Axel Muller come out at minimum on the bench, but I think there's a good chance he starts. You know, if Hoyland is available, maybe we see him slot in. I think there's a good chance we see Mike Tabulis play. But then again, Mike Tabulis, he's coming off a long injury, and he's been injured so much in recent years that, you know, it might take him a moment to get settled back in and to knock off the rust. So we could see him come in off the bench or maybe start, but then be replaced early if he's really struggling to keep up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, and we'll go into keys of the game here in a second. I think this game against New England showed that, you know, when Robertson and Grady are out there, Robertson seems to probably took grasp of the number 10 jersey.
Yeah.
And I thought Grady played really well. at 15, that if that pairing happens again, obviously that shows, you know, bonus point in the number of tries, which is great for Old Glory because they needed that extra bonus point. So well, I'm excited for that. I'm excited to see what that, you know, that pairing can obviously continue to play and play well. So excited to see there. I anticipate we probably won't have Hoyland yet. And I bring all this up because, just to jump ahead real quick, if you look at these next three games, two home games back-to-back, right? Big game here against Chicago. In conference, got to make sure you win the home opener, please the home crowd. Following week, San Diego Legion come into town. You know, San Diego Legion, rough start. Week one, they almost beat Seattle. And then, you know, week two, Dallas was hanging around. Obviously, San Diego was in control that match, but scorelines in the past have been much. That gap, I think, has gotten smaller. Dallas is a far better team. San Diego's 1-1 right now. You know, it's going to be a big test for them to come into DC, travel across the country. But those two right there are two teams that are contenders in terms of they're going to be competing for a playoff spot at the end of the season. And then the third game I want to bring up, and that's after these two home games, is Old Glory goes down and plays Anthem for the first time. Yeah. Right? So could you start to see other players come in? And I'm not overlooking Anthem by far. They've definitely been punching and playing well. But these next two home games, right? If you want to be a contender to represent the Eastern Conference, you got to win the games at home. So these two games are certainly very key. So key to victory, AKP. Let's jump into that right now. I'm going to start here. In my mind, Old Glory DC, you're playing at home. First home game at the Maryland Soccerplex. We talked a little bit about this in New England. You got to come out. I want Old Glory to score first and take control of the game. And what I mean by scoring first, not a freaking penalty. I want us getting tries. We need to start scoring tries and in bunches. I want 1-2 tries, penalty kick. We're 17 minutes in, and the score all of a sudden is, you know, 15-0, 17-0, something like that. Like, taking charge of the game, get the crowd super excited into it, and really just try and put the game away early. And that's what I want to see. That's my key to the game, is controlling, dictating the pace of the game from the very beginning, not letting the team hang around, and showing that, hey, new venue, exciting grass. When you come to Old Glory and you play in Maryland, yes, their stadium, it's going to be a tough time. And that's what they need to do. They need to, right off the bat, punch hard, score early, score often.
Yeah. I think, I said it last week, I think the key is control. And we're sort of on the same page there. Control possession, control the ball, rely on the forwards who have been excellent so far, and rely on your line out and your maul, which have been excellent. You know, force them to commit penalties to slow you down, eventually get one of them sent off because they repeatedly infringe, make them feel like they've got to do everything to stop you, and sort of be inevitable. And I think that will get them the win. Personally, I would love to see more from the back line too, especially on attack. I would love to see them open up a bit more, but also shut down a bit more on defense and close up those gaps that have opened up out wide, and close up those gaps that open up in broken play, and be a bit more secure. Because we've seen some great defense from this team when they're set, when they're in their line, when they're prepared, nothing gets through. I mean, we did not see New England really break apart the line at all when it was set. And it was only when things got sloppy, things were messy, that New England found opportunities to score. And I would love to see them shut that down this week.
Also, shout out Grady for one hell of a 50-22 kick that he had in the second half. That was a big momentum
turn.
Crazy. Yeah, so more of that, please, particularly with his boot. All right, so AKP, we're going to get into our score prediction. And it's funny because last week we both talked about, you know, after week one, we were a little nervous about how the offense was going to perform. And, you know, our score kind of reflected a lower score. But considering the fact that New England, historically, the past couple seasons, has had one of the top defenses, Old Glory scored 35 points in that game. Got the bonus. You know, they scored four more tries, so they got that. We talked about some more potential for more dynamic play because more players coming in. All this is the preamble to, I think this could be a game, particularly if the weather's nice, where we may see some tries raining on the scoreboard. So, or maybe not. But here's my score prediction. I like Old Glory in this one. I think they have a real shot. Got to win first game at the Maryland Soccerplex. I think this could be a... this might sound crazy. I think Old Glory can put up mid to upper 30s. I'm going to go Old Glory 38, Chicago 24-25. A comfortable win for DC. In control the entire time. Chicago will sniff and hunt around a little bit, but Old Glory continues to just punch, score, control the clock. It's a high-scoring game, 38-25, but I think that's my score, 38-25. Old Glory wins by 13.
Yeah, I'm going to go for 35-18 or something like that. I think Old Glory will struggle to keep Chicago completely out of the end zone, but I think they're going to be in control of this game. I think they're, you know, New England is a better team than Chicago is. This is a game we should win. I want to put it out there, like, clearly. Chicago is not as good as NOLA, not as good as New England. We should be winning this game. And, you know, Chicago might make the playoffs this year because the playoffs are so open. But if they do, it's going to be in the fourth spot, I think. Maybe the third spot. You know, there's a whole season to play out. We shouldn't read too much into the early results. But especially right now, Chicago has major problems. And so I think this should be a commanding win of at least 10 points. They shouldn't get the losing bonus point. I'll be disappointed if they get the losing bonus point.
Playing devil's advocate here. How does this game go sideways for Old Glory? How does Chicago win this game against Old Glory?
I think there's a couple of things that could really shake us up. One is if we struggled to keep the discipline in control. Like, we're a controlled team. We play a sort of controlled style where it's keep it in the forwards, you know, control possession, make ground on penalties and kicking to the corner and stuff like that. And, you know, if we start committing a bunch of penalties and giving them a lot of opportunities, those are going to go through every now and then, and that could really get us behind. And then I think also if the back three or the sort of outside backs can't do enough to contain and we get sucked into a broken play, sort of wide open game, then that could be a problem for us too.
Gotcha. Great. Something to look out for as we approach week three this weekend. All right, AKP, I want to jump into just the rest of the matchups week three, and then I'll close this out with the question of the episode. This will be a fun one, but let's look at the rest of week three. All right, AKP, week three, quick fire pick. Starting off, New England at home, hosting the number one seed in the Eastern Conference, NOLA Gold. Who you got?
I think it's going to be a tight one, but I think I'll take NOLA in this by 3 points.
Ooh, spicy. I love it. I think New England's probably going to play pretty pissed off.
Yeah.
They've got their St. Patrick's Day festival going on there. I mean, Old Glory laid the blueprint for how you beat New England at home. I do think it's closer, but I think New England probably pulls this one out. I think I have them winning by 5 or 6. It'll be a close game.
It could go either way, really.
Yeah. We covered Old Glory, DC versus Chicago. Again, that's 4 Eastern. Saturday night, Houston Sabercats at home against the Miami Sharks. I'll take this one first. Houston looks really good. You know, they play well at home. Miami struggling with some discipline issues. You know, just being able to put some points on the board. I think Houston probably wins this one. I think the strength is in the pack, and they probably win this one pretty comfortably. I think they win by 12 or 15 points.
Yeah, I think I have Houston here too. I think they've played pretty well so far, but I'm not sure because they've been a little shaky. I think we have yet to really see what Houston's about. But I take that win against Utah pretty seriously in week one. So I'll go with Houston too by, I don't know, 7 points.
Gotcha. Saturday night, this will be a fun one. Utah at home hosting the Seattle Seawolves. Utah is 1-1. They always play well at home. They're hosting the Seattle Seawolves, who are 2-0, but Seattle's first road game of the season. AKP, this is a tricky one. I'm going to let you go first on this one.
Yeah, I think, you know, Utah has had some struggles to start the season, but and Seattle obviously has won twice, but Starfire Stadium is also a very particular sort of venue. It's a very narrow field, and it suits the way that Seattle plays. I think they might struggle a bit more on the road, and especially, you know, their first test outside of Starfire. But I think I'm still going to take Seattle by 3 points or something. I think it's going to be another close one. Yeah, and could go either way.
The home field advantage, and I think I could be wrong. I feel like the field dimensions are a little bit. They play well to Utah's game there at home, and I know Seattle's got some pieces there though. It will be a big test for them, their first road game of the season. I think Seattle right now is the class of the Western Conference. I think this game will be tight because I think Utah will find a way to just stay in it. We might even see Joey Mano. I don't know. I doubt it, but yeah, I'm going to go Seattle too. I think they squeaked this one out 4 or 5 points, but you know, if you're Seattle, you continue to just like Mac Mason, just rack up the points off the tee, 20 in week one, I think 17 in week two, proven formula there. Just let automatic Mac kick it. So that's my game plan for them. And then late night, Saturday night, San Diego Legion at home against Snapdragon Stadium, taking on their Southern California competitors. Just a quick drive down I-5. If you're coming down from Los Angeles, they're going to be hosting RFC LA, AKP San Diego 1-1. They should not have problems with RFC LA. They've got some pieces there, but I think this is Snapdragon. Sorry, I think this is San Diego in a... This could be a bigger win and a chance for San Diego to lay down a marker saying, hey, look, slow start, but we want to contend for the best team in the West. I think San Diego potentially puts a big one on RFC LA, maybe wins by 18 or more.
Interesting, because I was sort of thinking that LA has a chance in this. Oh, I think we're going to – so I've been sort of mentally dividing teams into levels in my head, and
yeah.
You know, most of the teams are in the sort of middle of the pack. I don't think we know, you know, us, New England, NOLA, Seattle, San Diego, all those teams are sort of middle of the pack. LA is maybe half a step behind, but I think we're going to learn, you know, they improved so much week one to week two. If they improve a bunch again from week two to this week, I think they've got a real shot against Seattle or San Diego. They've got a real chance of... Mm-hmm. of being competitive against the sort of middle of the pack teams. And so I think, I don't know if I'm going to predict that they win, but I think it's going to be competitive.
Yeah.
They played really well last weekend. So
they did. They scored first against Houston, but I feel like Houston was just in control.
Houston got lucky with a couple of things. You know, there were a couple of LA tries that got brought back that, you know, but for you know, being half a step in front of the kicker or half a step on the wrong side of the ruck, they would have been tries, and that would have been a totally different picture. I do think LA is not quite there. There's a reason I have them in the half step behind category in my head. And if that plays out, then I think San Diego wins by 7 to 10 points. But I think there's a lot of opportunity for improvement for LA, and they've shown a lot of improvement already. So I don't want to say that, you know, again, they absolutely could beat San Diego here, I think.
Yeah. All right. Looking at the final game of week three, Sunday afternoon, we have Anthem RC hosting the Dallas Jackals. Anthem RC 0-2. They played better against NOLA, 34-19, you know, threatening maybe to come back. Maybe NOLA was just kind of sleepwalking at the end there. Dallas Jackals 1-1. Good first win for Dallas, beating RFC LA. Week two, you know, they lost by 7 to San Diego. The scoreline makes it seem like it was a little bit closer. I think San Diego was just kind of in control of that. This could be interesting, AKP, and I know Dallas is vastly improved. I think Anthem is starting to feel themselves a little bit. They've got some pieces there. Junior Gaff at the center, he is a big runner. I really like Ty Aljibori, the wing, the younger brother of Cap Deagle, Milan Aljibori, who's a flanker. Aljibori scored in two consecutive matches. Am I saying Anthem's going to win this game? I don't think so, but I think the scoreline's going to be closer. And I think Dallas will ultimately win. They'll probably pull away in the last 15 minutes or so, but it could be single-digit win, 7 or 8 points, Dallas Jackals win.
I think that's a bit optimistic, but I definitely think that Anthem will probably continue to improve. This is probably going to be the easiest opponent that they've played so far, you know, just because New England and NOLA, I think, are really properly good. And so I think they will have their best performance yet, but I'd still expect it to be a double-digit win for the Dallas Jackals.
Gotcha. All right. So that does it for week 3 in MLR. AKP, week 2 again, just satisfying, but still hungry for more, just a glimpse of what this Old Glory DC team can do. So AKP, to close out the episode, question of the week. Of course, we know it's going to be a home opener. Looks like the weather's looking pretty good. AKP, predict the attendance figure for Old Glory DC's home opener. How many fans do you think will be there?
Asking the easy questions here. By which I mean I have no idea. I think let's set some levels to get a sense of what would look good and what would look bad. Back when they were playing at Catholic, I think they managed to get 1,800 fans. You know, so close to 2,000 was I think the maximum they got. I think at Segra, they maxed out at 2,800, so 2,000, so just shy of 3,000 fans was their max. I'm hoping for somewhere in that range. I think it's got to be. I'm hoping for north of 2,000 fans. You know, it should be reasonably warm. I'm hoping that the weather will be decent. And, but it's, I mean, it's in a different state. It's in a totally new place. So I'll be there. I'll be tailgating.
You'll be one.
Rain or shine.
Couple others,
yeah. 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 Me and some of the guys will be tailgating. So I think it's got the potential to be reasonably well attended. And I think even if it's 2,000 fans, it's going to be great in that stadium.
I think it's a lot of things in play here, right? New venue, you know, weather. I think that win over New England certainly people are paying attention. I think that's gonna
get fans excited to come out.
I think fans are excited, and I think that attendance will increase as we get into the season, we get into the warmer months. You know, there's a lot of activities and stuff. I think a reasonable expectation is north of 2,000. Right, and I think that 2,000, 3,000, I think will look good and sound good there, and I'm optimistic to see setting a good foundation for bigger crowds to come. So,
if we were to get over 3,000, we would break New England's home opener numbers, and I think that would be pretty satisfying as well.
Absolutely, they do a great job up there, packing it out, and I imagine they're going to have a pretty good attendance for their match against NOLA, St. Patrick's Day weekend, and all that stuff. So exciting stuff coming ahead in week 3. Old Glory DC, AKP's got one more point here. I'm going to let him close it out.
Yeah, no, it's just a side note. You know how the Free Jacks fans are always complaining that we somehow took their colors despite both teams starting at the same time and us being named after the flag that has those colors and them being basically Canada South and not actually having any right to the red, white, and blue at all. Well, guess what? This week, they're not even playing in red, white, and blue because they've got released their St. Patrick's Day uniforms and they're green and black. So maybe New England has really just ceded us the colors. And I think that's really the appropriate place to end this and the appropriate place for the Free Jacks fandom to be right now.
Couldn't have said any better myself for my color coordinator, color war winner, Alistair Kirschpool. I am John Fitzpatrick. You've been listening to the Glorious Rugby Podcast. We'll talk to you next week when we break down week 3's game against the Chicago Hounds. Talk to you next week.